afternoon, everybody. Welcome. This is Bob Schechter with Fools Media Group. I'm here with J.W. Najarian, and we have the pleasure of being able to interview today Holly Mosher. Holly is an award-winning filmmaker who brings socially conscious films to the public. Holly graduated from NYU, the Tisch School of Arts. Holly's produced a number of commercials and feature films. We'll name a few: Hummingbird, Money Talks, Maybe Baby, Vanishing of the Bees, and her newest production that she's working on right now is called Bonsai. It's all about the works of the Nobel Peace Prize winner Muhammad Yunus and his Grameen Bank, and we are absolutely delighted that Holly's going to share her insights and her work. Holly, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me here, Bob.
Your new production is called Bonsai. So why Bonsai?
Okay, well, Muhammad Yunus tells this great story that poor people are bonsai people. They have the full potential to be the tallest tree in the forest, but their seed has been put in a pot, so their roots are not getting the nutrients they need. So they become bonsai people, where they're just a small shadow of what their full potential. And his work is really about unleashing human potential.
One of the things that Muhammad was big on, and he started his program, was microcredit. Could you give our listeners a little background on what the microcredit is and how it affected the
Muhammad,
people?
Yeah, a lot of people might not know who Muhammad is.
Okay, so Muhammad Yunus is a Bangladeshi, and he was in America as a Fulbright scholar, and he was a professor. He's an economics professor. And so what sparked me was, how did an economics professor get a Nobel Peace Prize? Why didn't he get the economics prize? And so when I read that, I was just so fascinated, and I had to go find out more. And what happened is that he had moved back to Bangladesh as soon as they were becoming their own country, because, you know, at first it was all India, and then the British, you know, when the British left, it was separated into Pakistan and India. But Bangladesh was actually part of Pakistan, even though they were 1,000 kilometers apart. And in 1971, they became their own country, and that's when he moved home to help establish the, you know, his new country. And during that process of separation, you know, there's a lot of chaos if you're a nascent country, and then the distribution of food got off balance, so there was a huge famine. Millions of people were going hungry, and he just thought, you know, he was seeing people dying around him, so he wanted to do something. So through his work, he actually did it through, you know, with his students. He was looking at poverty and how to help the people get enough to eat, and he realized that he could lend 42 people in just one village $27, and that could help get them out of their indentured servitude that was going on with the landowners and the people that were employing them.
Well, the surprising part of that story, if I heard it correctly, was that when he asked the people what they needed, and they said that they wanted to get their kids out of indentured slavery, he asked, well, what would that take? And they told him $27, and he originally thought, $27 for every family here, how much would that be? They said, no, $27 for the whole village or whole place.
Yeah, for all of them. For 42 people, it was $27 amongst them.
Incredible.
And then, yeah, and then when they paid him back, he realized he was onto something, and then he went to a local bank and asked for a $300 loan to grow that to more people. And, of course, the bank was just like, you know, would have laughed him out of the bank if he hadn't been the head of the economics department at the university. So after a lot of, you know, he had to really fight for this, but he finally got them to do it without the guarantee. And because he said, if I have the guarantee, then I'll just be holding the power over them like these, you know, village money lenders.
Right.
So he was trying to get away from the old system and having any power over people. But the amazing thing is, now that he's helping over 8 million people, and when I did the math, when I found out about this, I was like, that's one, it was 6.5 million when I started this project 4 years ago, and I thought, that's one out of every 1,000 people on Earth that he is directly helping just with his bank.
Amazing.
and now
but how
it's
did he go from? Yeah, and how did, but you know what? What's interesting? How did he go from that $300 loan to owning a bank?
Well, finally, in 1983, he got he was able to start the bank separately. Before that, he'd been doing the service through a local bank, and it was just so much paperwork. You know, the way the other systems work. You know, the bank workers there weren't trained to work with these kinds of people. So he really, you know, was eager to set up something separately where he could just run it in a very simple way.
I want to back up a little bit, Holly, because one of the amazing things that Muhammad did was, you know, he gave loans, and after he got the people out of indentured servitude, at that point, they would just go back, my understanding, they would just go back to that to get their next meal. If they didn't have some kind of monies to help build some kind of business for themselves that could keep them out of indentured servitude. So he was giving like $5, $10, $15, I think max was $15 loans to the people to help start little businesses, and that's where the whole microloan concept came from. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's how it started. And then they have a really organized system that's very scalable, and that's why they've grown so much. First now, their first loan is 5,000 taco, which is about $70. That's standard. And they have to meet every week, and they actually have to put away savings every week as well, because he warns people that most people will face a health problem, a business problem, and, you know, natural disaster in their lifetime, so they need to save. That's one of the really important aspects to doing microcredit successfully is the savings program. And then after, you know, each loan cycle, they can incrementally get more money, but they have to learn to use the money. You know, a lot of these women that are the borrowers have never had control of money in the family. So,
tell me something, because you just brought up the point, you say women. Why does Muhammad not lend to men?
Yeah, originally he lent to men, and then after 6 years, it was his goal to be, half women and half men, because there in Bangladesh, the banks were not loaning to women. They weren't dealing with women. And even here, I mean, I remember my mom said that when she had her checking account, you know, my father had to co-sign way back when. So, you know, this is the, what was also interesting for me was to see women's rights and how we've progressed in the last 100 years and see what it must have been like for, you know, our grandmothers. And that was very exciting because, you know, it's slowly, this program also really empowers the women to be an equal partner in the household. So what he found was that when the women were the borrowers, they put the money directly into the children's education, into improving the house, into improving the food supply for the family. You know, after all, historically, the women are the caretakers of the family. So the money just went so much farther. And there's a wonderful book, Half the Sky, which also looks at this issue. And, you know, study after study has been done finally where it's shown that when women have control of the money, the whole family improves. So he realized the money was going to go so much farther, so then he said, forget 50-50, let's just lend to the women.
Well, it's amazing that culture embraced that philosophy. It's a Middle Eastern culture, even though it's a much more liberated Middle Eastern culture. Back then when he was doing this, it really was still a male-dominated society. That they embraced this whole philosophy was pretty amazing, too.
Yeah, I think it came through growing, you know, naturally. I don't think they embraced this. You know, had he started out saying he was going to just lend to women, I don't think it would have been successful. But that's the wonderful thing with what he's doing. Like, also with their housing loans, the women have to get the titles to the homes. And that's a radical but simple rule that can change, you know, societies. Because around the world, women still only own 1% of land.
Right.
You know, so globally, we're still facing this issue.
Holly, let me ask you, you didn't start with Banzai in this, and following Muhammad Yunus. Let me backtrack a little bit. Where do you come from, and what inspired you to work on human rights and do the movies that you did, which are usually purpose and cause related?
Yeah, it's funny. I ended up going to film school, but I think I've always been very politically motivated, and I even quoted George Orwell on my college entrance exam and said all art should be political. And so I think it's just, you know, I was lucky when I was younger. My parents took me to travel to South America, and I read the book The Jungle and Diet for a New America when I was 13, so I became a vegetarian, and I saw the issues with human rights, with workers' rights, with animal rights. I think I had my eyes opened at 13, and it really just, it hit me so hard that I needed to help in some way. And then my guidance counselor suggested I go to film school. And I hadn't really, you know, growing up in Milwaukee, you know, you don't think of the film business. I didn't think of it as a career. And then I got accepted to NYU Film with a scholarship, and I was like, well, great, okay. And it took a while to come out of, you know, film school and really make this my life's work. I worked on a lot of other projects first. And then just something wasn't sitting right with me to be just working on projects that didn't have a deeper meaning, because I really give several years of my life to each film, and it just has to be more meaningful. And I finally, at the age of 30, switched and said, okay, I'm only working on this stuff. So now, almost 10 years later, I have a nice little track record of, you know, films that are actually inspiring people.
Well, we totally applaud you for that, and we're so, you know, when I met you, I think I met you at a Meta meeting, and
mm-hmm.
we talked, and you mentioned Mohamed Yunus. I got very excited in meeting you and maybe getting a chance to speak with you. As Bob, my partner, had talked about, we, you know, are inspired very much by Mohamed Yunus, and everything we do is inspired by his social business concept. Can you talk about that and explain to us what the social business concept is?
Well, I think the interesting thing is, you know, Mohamed Yunus has his view of social business, and then I'm a part of a great organization called the Social Enterprise Alliance, you know, which is really trying to push legislation here in the U.S., and then there's, you know, socially responsible investing. You know, there's so many branches of it. And it's all welcome. You know, whatever is your part in the world, whatever you can do to give back, however you're, you know, when I speak about the film and the different projects he's doing, like I've spoken at Rotary clubs, and, you know, a banker will come up to me afterwards and say, oh, I want to do this here. Great, he's a banker. He could actually do microcredit. But then somebody else who works with the healthcare system says, oh, I have this little clinic. How can I be more of a social business? And I say, great, you can be a social business in healthcare. Or somebody might be selling products, and I say, oh, great, well, here's how he's doing yogurt or shoes. So that's the beautiful thing, is social business can be done in every sector. You know, like social media. You know, I consider myself, you know, a social business media producer. So we all, there's all these pieces of the pie, and what it looks like can be very different. Mohamed Yunus would like it to be that there's no revenue besides, you know, people are paid a decent salary and the work is being done, but all the profit goes back into the company, because that way you're not being put off track, and like times are tough, well, maybe we should do a little bit more profit for our shareholders or this or that. He feels it can compromise you. So that's his view, which is, you know, in particular. But then, you know, some people
that's
here
funny, because
like, oh,
that's what we were arguing about was, I told Bob that I had some issues with that particular view. That might slow down some people from doing social business. Because I understood social business was, on one hand, you have the return on investment, bottom dollar business. The other hand, you have the philanthropic, go beg for a dollar, put 98 cents out in the field, and then have to go beg for another dollar. And he tied those two together into the social business structure. It says you can have a business that that puts you in abundance and still do social good in the world.
Yeah. In my opinion, I think there's room for all of it. If you his latest book, Building Social Business, is great to explain his theory fully behind that, and I thought that was really helpful to read. And there he even describes it as, you know, the businesses should be helping the poor. You know, this is really because you have to raise the bottom of, you know, all of this comes down to income disparity. You know, if you have the bottom.
That follows the bonsai analogy, right?
Exactly. Because what he saw and why he started lending to the poorest of the poor, because originally he did work with crops and trying to improve crop yield, and then he realized, wow, those people with land are actually better off than these people husking the rice for 3 days at the end of the process. So you really have to raise the bottom level. And I can say I've seen this personally, because I used to live in Brazil for 3 years, and compared to here, we used to have a bigger middle class. And I felt it when I lived there in 1990. You know, they didn't have much. And then as time has progressed, when I've gone back there, I've seen that they have a growing middle class and we have a shrinking middle class. I can feel it.
Right,
and
you agree.
That's our problem. Our CEOs are taking so many times the salary of the lowest wage workers, whereas we used to have a much smaller income disparity. And that's why everything's happening in Wisconsin now and all of this. It's all the same.
It is, although I do have to read Muhammad's book, because JW and I were arguing the point of whether a company that does social good for the individual or just social good at large. And I my feeling is that if you focus on just being socially relevant, like you sell green widgets, that's not the same. That's not social business. That's a capital business that just gives back socially, as opposed to a social business that affects the individual, who can then affect the society at large. So,
yeah.
I will read the book. And by the way, you're just not old enough to remember the 50s and 60s when the World War II ended and we did have a huge burgeoning middle class, because the disparity in not necessarily income, but I think education wasn't as big as it is now. Education and opportunity. But let's get back to what you're doing with Muhammad Yunus.
Yeah, well, let me read to you the 7 principles of social business, because I think this will help the listener. Yeah. So number 1, business objective will be to overcome poverty or one or more problems, such as education, health, technology access, and environment, which threaten people and society, not profit maximization. 2 is financial and economic sustainability. 3, investors get back their investment amount only. No dividend is given beyond their investment money. So investors would get back, if they put $1 million in, they would get the million back. So that's one thing that's exciting to me, is like there's so many people that give to charity, but you can think of this, if your charitable money goes into a business and then comes back to you, you get to give it again. So in a way, you're recycling your charity money.
Okay,
then number 4 is, when investment is paid back, company profit stays with the company for expansion and improvement. 5, environmentally conscious. 6, workforce gets market wage with better working conditions. And 7 is my favorite, do it with joy.
When you went and visited his offices, you told us a story earlier, before we came on to record, about the social businesses that you saw there.
Yeah, that's the exciting thing. Like, you know, I went there knowing about the microcredit. That's what he got the Nobel Peace Prize for. My first visit was in February of 2007, after he'd gotten the award in December of 2006. And actually, it was a funny story. My first day there, I happened to walk off the elevator on his floor, and he was walking out of his office, and this man, even though he's done so much, is so humble. He actually came over to me and said, "Hi, what's your name? Where are you from?" And, you know, I was like, aren't you too busy? You just got to know this guy. And I had no appointment with him. It was just a random one of those chance encounters where I knew then that I was on the right path. that I had to make this film. But then the other thing with the elevators is, you know, here's their company is in maybe a 20-story building in Dhaka. And I would get off the elevator on different floors, and I'd see Grameen Shakti, Grameen Kalyan, Grameen Shika. And I was like, what are all these other Grameen, this, that, or the other? And they're like, oh, that's our healthcare company. Oh, that's our alternative energy company. Oh, that's our education program. And I was like, wow, just running a bank wasn't enough. He had to go and start all these other companies. But then what I realized is I saw what he saw. Having access to financial services is not enough. Poverty is not just about money. Poverty is about a lack of access. It's a lack of access to financial services. It's a lack of access to health care. It's a lack of access to education. It's a lack of access to technology or communication or quality products or, you know, the list goes on and on. So what he is doing is seeing poverty in a holistic way and trying to tackle it in every way possible, you know, whether it's clean water, anything.
Yeah, he actually believes that someday, you know, we go to museums now and we see things about the Holocaust and the World Wars and things like that. He believes that someday we're going to go to a museum and actually see poverty as in the museum. In other words, he believes that if we do work at giving opportunity to the lowest levels, that we can actually get rid of poverty.
Yeah, I do hope he's right. He's such a visionary, and seeing his work on the ground, if we implemented
what he's doing, if we do
our part.
There's the reality check now. I mean, obviously you've done this movie, Banzai, which I actually look forward to seeing now, and I assume it's going to be incredibly enlightening for us all as to what we should aspire to and what this man's already done. But now that you've worked on this stuff since the mid-2000s and you've learned a lot about it, tell me where this has been implemented, if at all, beyond his country. And do you think his vision of 50 years to delete poverty can actually be translated into the other countries?
Well, I sure hope it is. I can say that the microcredit has been replicated in almost every country around the world. You know, it's already happening here. They actually have Grameen America in New York, I think in Nebraska, and they're opening several branches of it. But the thing is, what does it look like? Just like the term organic can be, you know, twisted, different microcredit programs look differently. So like I said, one of the things that they do is the savings. Another aspect is really social work and educating the women, teaching them the basics of life. Like one of the interesting things I saw was women saying, well, I learned to keep my house clean. Or, you know, or I got a toilet. These people didn't have toilets necessarily, and that was leading to health problems. So a lot of microcredit is beyond the money, and the fact that the bank workers come every week, they have a chance to interact with the women and, you know, educate them on different things. So that, you know, what microcredit actually looks like, people will really get a good view of what this means in the film, because it's not just spending money.
Oh, you know, Muhammad Yunus is going around with his microcredit initiatives, and are you saying that he's actually been able to get them? I mean, the fact that they've been implemented in the United States, that's a major coup.
Yeah. You know, because other people have tried it before, but I think, you know, not since it's so much more complex than just giving money, it's important to do it well, and they even offer what they call the Build, Operate, Transfer, BOT program. Like, if somebody's interested in starting microcredit, you could hire them to help you come in and get it up and running and functioning and then transfer it over to you so that you have the right training. And they've done that in several countries and other programs. So,
I heard, Polly, a program called Kiva. I don't know if this is true. I haven't checked it, but at one point when Kiva is doing microloans, and there was a point where I understood that they're having problems finding places to place the microloans, so they stopped taking in monies at one point. I don't know if that's true, but
I don't know if that's true because I haven't had time to keep up with everything else. I'm trying to look at other groups now to talk about partnering, and I want to then do the due diligence and see if I believe in the programs they're doing because it has to be done well. There's a company in Mexico that's microcredit, but they charge 90% interest.
Oh, geez.
To me, that's not helping. So
right.
When you say the term, that's why I call the term microcredit is like the term organic, and that it can get twisted. I followed two of the women in the struggling member or beggar member program. I followed Aisha, and she was so wonderful. Just a warm woman, but had a hard, hard life. And she is now selling vegetables door to door.
Oh.
And I don't want to give away too much because her story unfolds in the film.
Oh, it's in the movie? Okay.
Yeah. Aisha's in the film, and at the end you meet her kids, and at first you're like, how did, you know, seeing where she lived and then seeing how well-spoken and wonderful her kids are, you're like, wow, she raised these three amazing people. And then I also filmed Sergio Bono, who is an older woman, because also, you know, what do you do when, you know, they're 50 years old, so what do you do for the women who are over 50 and have been widowed and all of this? They're too old to go door-to-door, but, you know, even still the struggling member program can really help them. I mean, this one woman, it just broke my heart. She was living in a hovel that nobody should have to live in, and just, it's heartbreaking. But with her loan, she bought some tin to fix her roof so she at least didn't get rained on, and also, you know, some chickens and ducks.
Okay, tell us a little about your journey. I mean, you were out, I don't know how long you were out there. Did you follow Muhammad around? Did you follow the people around? Kind of tell us a little about your journey of making the film.
Yeah, when I set out, I decided I would follow a new bank branch being set up because I really wanted to see what this work looks like from the ground up and what he went through when he started this program. Like, how do you even get borrowers? How does this really work? So I got to follow a new bank branch being set up in the far north of the country. And so then I followed new borrowers getting their first loan, and I followed them over the course of a year to see how their lives improved over a year. And that's where I learned the things like the sanitation and keeping the house clean and the toilet were actually a big deal for them. You know, like
amazing.
Something I would have never thought about being here and reading about microcredit.
Right.
And then I also followed a woman who is now on her village council. She's been a borrower for over 15 years and done so well that she's now giving back. Because the other thing that's so exciting is that he really believes in the power of the human spirit, and we all have our selfish side, of course, but at the same time, equally, we all have our selfless side, and we all want to give back.
Mm-hmm.
You see that it's part of human nature, so once you get beyond the struggling point, you can actually give back.
Talking about giving back, I understand there was a story that Muhammad, after the bank, had about $500 million in assets, that he actually gave the bank back to the women? What's that about?
Oh, well, the bank is kind of like a co-op. It's actually owned by the borrowers. I don't know at which point. I thought it might have been the beginning, but maybe in the beginning, the government owned more of the bank, and now they still own a certain percentage. But I think as the bank reclaimed their ownership points, they gave more and more to the women. And when I was, I think they even got a dividend paid out to each borrower.
That's incredible.
It really is. I mean, could that work here? I mean, when you look at the charitable end of it, where it's a win-win scenario, you can give your money, and instead of giving to charity where you give once and it's gone, you can give, get that money back, give it again, get it back, give it again. It's a remarkable concept can that work here? I mean, where we have nothing but greed and miserable people?
I think we have so much more than just greed and miserable people here.
But, I hope you're right.
I think the idea of the co-op, the bank, what are those, the union banks, the
credit
community, credit unions, we have some of that here, they just haven't been promoted in the same way that all these others that are in our normal capitalistic system have been promoted through advertising, you know, so I think we have all seeds of it. And we have so many nonprofits. I mean, whenever any disaster happens, Americans are very generous. But we just need to focus. I mean, he's showing us that there's a better way to focus our giving. And
I think we're going to make heat that we talked about earlier, and that's sustainability. One of the problems with nonprofits is they're very hard to sustain, especially in today's economic conditions.
Exactly. But there's no rule that nonprofits cannot be making money. That's the thing. It has to be in line with their mission. We just have to change how people think of for-profit and non-profit and see that there's this whole other segment. And that's why I mentioned earlier the Social Enterprise Alliance. I just joined them last year and now on the board of the LA chapter, which they just opened in the fall. Mm-hmm. And they're really trying to push legislation.
That's great. Could you tell us how to get a hold of that? What is it called again? And how?
Yeah,
hold
the Social Enterprise Alliance. Their website is se-alliance.org.
Very cool. Let's talk about your movie real quick, because I know you're having a screening in Chicago.
I'm screening in Chicago at the Wright Foundation for Transformational Leadership on March 24th. From 6 to 9 p.m., and I'm going to speak afterwards, Dr. Wright, who runs the Transformational Leadership Program there, and actually Muhammad Yunus will be there via video conference for maybe 10 minutes after the screening, and then I'm hoping to have a screening here in April in L.A.
In Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
Very cool. And we're really excited for you.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal stuff. I wish I had the same positive outlook for our country as I do now for the rest of the world. I see this as a great program. Things can work for the rest of the world. I'm so skeptical about our country, though. JW and I are absolutely bent on trying to help and trying to do something. So aside from joining all these groups and watching your movies, we're going to try and affect things. Hopefully.
Well, yeah, the exciting thing is, I mean, what I saw there is how much can happen. All of his work has happened in my lifetime. All of it. And
that's true.
Think of the internet and where this was. I didn't have an email address. I had one email in college to my teacher in 94. And look at how we're connecting around the world. And look at what happened in Egypt with Facebook. It's phenomenal. We are all connected. Change can happen very quickly. In 10 years, the world can look completely different. So if we all do our part and we come together, if we have the right language around this, if we create the right laws around this, things can really happen.
I hope you're right. I like your vision.
It's an exciting time.
I hope I'm right, too. I'm not always right, but I have a vision.
All right. Well, young people like yourself that get involved early on, I mean, that's really where the world needs to go. That the old people like JW and I, we can try to, you know, retroactively undo what we've done all our lives. But if you guys take over and start to affect change early on, then you'll inherit a much better world than we left behind, to be honest.
Bonsai is it for a while, or are you going to take it?
Yeah, I plan on taking a year on the speaking engagement circuit. I really want to take this film and my experiences on the road, because you can see the film, but I would like to answer people's questions and really help consult with them about what it could look like for them. Mm-hmm. So I really, now that it's finished, I'm just beginning, and I'm still just completing the film.
And do you have distribution yet, or?
No, in April, that's when I want to do my screening in L.A. I'd like to show it to distribute for the first time.
Okay, so very good. So how can people get a hold of you if they want you to speak, if they want to offer a place to screen, or if they want to offer help in getting distribution for you?
Yeah, if they come to my website, I have my contact information there, and it's Bonsai Movie, BONSAIMOVIE.com, and I'm very accessible. I know, I get back to people who email me.
Yes,
and I'm looking forward to having this national dialogue on both microcredit and social business.
All right. Well, Holly, thank you very much again. Holly Mosher. Holly, thank you again for being a part of our show. We really appreciate it. And you can hear this audio as well as others at our site at www.networkingfools.com. And, again, Holly, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys, both so much. This was really great.